You are listening to the strongest podcast in CrossFit. This is the Type 1 Lifting Podcast. All right, guys, I want to tell you a little bit about Type 1 Lifting. So Type 1 Lifting is a clothing brand that proceeds of the shirts, the hats, and everything else go to the Children's Diabetes Foundation. This whole t-shirt company started from me taking care of a five-year-old girl from the emergency department at the Children's Hospital I worked at in Atlanta for a while back. I thought I needed to do a little bit more than kind of just talk about my story. So this is how I started the clothing line, because I wanted to show people that even though diabetics have this really bad disease, we can still do amazing things in our life, and diabetes won't stop, you know, stop us reaching our goals. So go check out type1lifting.com. And
all right, guys, you know, if you welcome have any questions, to a new episode of the Type 1 Lifting podcast. I have
you guys enjoy the show.
Author, TEDx speaker.
Hey guys, we have a new sponsor for the Type 1 Lifting podcast. The company's called Liberté Lifestyle.
Jared Grabiel, how you doing,
Liberté,
man?
Is a French word meaning freedom.
How are you?
And the company was founded on the desire to have freedom to choose what we want to do with our lives. I actually had the owner, Nicole, on my podcast on episode 28. So if you want to go back and listen to her, she talks about how she started the company and what she wants to do in the future with the company, which is pretty cool.
Been out a little while.
They actually have knee sleeves, wrist wraps, shirts, shorts.
Yeah, thank you. I do
love the knee sleeves. I have the ice cream knee sleeves, and I love them so much. They haven't, the neoprene's still good. The seams haven't split compared to other knee sleeves that I've had in the past, and I'm planning to keep these for a very, very long time. So Nicole actually gave me a promo code for you guys too. So it's all capital letters, TYPE and the number one. So it's type one. So go to LibertéLifestyle.com, check out what they have in the store, use the promo code TYPE1, and save some coin.
Yeah,
so let's go to the episode.
Job there. But yeah, I just wanted to correct you there.
All good.
Anyway, so not super important, but figured it's worth clarifying.
Okay, so you started out like as a personal trainer. So what was kind of like, what kind of made you get involved as a personal trainer?
Yeah, I'll try to, you know, I don't want to make this story too short or too long, but I started selling weed at 11. I was raised, I guess you could say, on the other side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. And progressively did that from like 11 to 17. And when I say progressively, I started with literally like a $20 bag of pot and made like $25 all the way until, you know, when I was 17, I was living on my own and distributing much more than that. And I had gotten arrested, got caught. There was this big ordeal with like, you know, this like narc unit and crazy story. Went to county jail summer after my senior year of high school. But prior to that, when I had to quit smoking weed while I was waiting trial, they began to drug test me. And so like when I was a pothead and a pot dealer, I was all in there, like as much of a specialist you could be in the weed industry. Like that was what I was. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't super active, but I've always been like lean and kind of like had a six pack at 12 years old or whatever. And so quit smoking weed, long story short, didn't know what else to do with my time. And I started lifting with a couple friends. And then shortly after that is when I went to county jail. And so when I started exercising, I was like, this is amazing. Like I felt so good and self-empowered. At the same time, I'm a senior in high school and I'm starting to build like a chest and some biceps, right? So I just fell in love with the process and would study and read everything I could about it. And then I went to jail like a couple months later. Mm-hmm. So in county jail, I would make these workouts up every day. Imagine COVID style at home workouts, right? Because jail is nothing like the movies where there's like weight benches outside and people like bench pressing. They would kill each other with those things.
Yeah.
So you're in a dorm that's like dimly lit with yellow lights and like a phone booth you can do dips on and little picnic tables you can put your feet underneath and do crunches. And so I would make up these workouts every day. And so I got to a place where after breakfast, guys would come to my room and be like, what's today's workout? And this is long before CrossFit for me. And we would, there was these beds in the room. You could like fold the legs of a bed and someone lay on the bed and would get underneath it and bench press the bed. Right. So I'm making all these random workouts up. And one day this older gentleman in county was like, Jared, you should be a personal trainer. And obviously I was having like an identity crisis because I had sort of anticipated selling weed, not really my whole life. Like I wasn't that closed-minded, but it was just, that was my near-term plan. Yeah. I was really successful for a 17-year-old kid. And so I was on this journey of like, crap, what do I do when I get out of here? Clearly crime isn't cutting it, right? Like in the state of Florida, especially. And so he was like, you should be a personal trainer. And I didn't know what that was. Like I wasn't raised in the gym. I didn't like go to the gym with my dad or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, yeah, you get paid to work people out. And I was like, what? Like that's a dream job. And right when you hear that as a kid, you think I get paid to work out with people. And it's clearly not that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Close, you know? And so when I got out, I literally, like, I remember it was probably the third thing I did. Like my mom picked me up and we ate Denny's. And then I went home and plugged in the router and, you know, asked Jeeves, like, how to be a personal trainer, right?
Gosh, that's old school. Jeeves, geez.
Yeah, I know. There's a ton of people who will have no idea what that is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so I literally was like, how to be a personal trainer. I remember it was two things. One, get CPR certified. Okay, cool. I paid $50 at Winter Haven Hospital to become CPR certified. And then I pursued a personal training certification. And then like, also this is back in 2008. So the economy had just sort of crashed. But also like you couldn't apply online everywhere quite yet. Like this is just a different time. And so, I was going door to door with a resume trying to get a job. And so long, like I was going to say to make a long story short, but that's not true. I went to a Gold's Gym and really the chicken and egg conundrum kept, pushing me back. Like, hey, we love how passionate you are, but you don't have any experience. And I'm like, well, how do I get experience if no one will hire me? However, I had a ton of sales experience because while I was selling pot, I was part-time telemarketing at a place called IUPA, the International Union of Police Associations. And so I had a ton of sales experience. And of course, with my criminal background, so I was hired as a salesperson at a Gold's Gym instead of a personal trainer and ended up doing some training on the side at the gym, like not, you know, whatever. Not like hired for it. And then eventually became a sales manager, eventually became a GM of that gym, went on to become like a personal training director and then like an area manager and fun stuff like that. So that's what ultimately got me into the business.
Okay. And I heard in a podcast that you typically for your personal training style, you added, you know, you pretty much doubled the price because you thought like with your experience and your expertise, you're worth that amount. And typically for me, when I was personal training, like they had a salesperson there and they would get like, they would like say, hey, you know, you'll pay for what, like $50 for a half an hour. And like, they get like half of it. And so, yeah. And cause obviously like you want to get as many clients as you can. And then, you know, but like, why, what was your thought through the whole process of like doubling your price to, you know, to do what you wanted to do?
Yeah. So kind of to give a little bit more context to that story. So from 2008 to 2015, I had progressed in like management roles, at health clubs and ended up being, a relatively successful, like area operator for a chain of health clubs and never quite got to just personal trained. So, but when I was doing some stuff on the side, I was relatively cheap, like 40, 50, $60 an hour. So that was when I was real young and it was just like whatever people would pay, I would train them for. Mm-hmm. But then as I matured as a professional and continued to educate myself both through experience personally and professionally, but also like continued education through NASM master training courses and all that fun stuff. I'd spent a ton of time, energy, and money on continued education. When I left the chain of health club, like I left the health club industry to become an independent personal trainer, I was much more matured at that point and much more experienced. And so I felt because of my education and my experience alone, I'm worth more than what plenty of people are charging, in my opinion at the time, but also because of my passion and dedication, because just something about me is like, I'm a learner. And I think that's a superpower as a personal trainer, because you can have a generalized personal training certification, still be a great trainer.
Yeah.
But you know, when I have a 17-year-old kid that tore his ACL playing high school football, but he wants to go on to play college football, he needs to rehabilitate, re-strengthen, gain symmetry back in the left leg as it relates to the right leg, which wasn't damaged, right? Versus my next client an hour later that it has onset, Alzheimer's, right? So like those are two totally different people. Generalized personal training certifications definitely help you with those people, right? Like we have a periodization model through the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And of course through CrossFit, there's a plethora of information. Mm-hmm. But because I would have this 17-year-old and I would just be burying myself in the books on what's the best way to approach training this kid, right? Like, what does it look like for a kid to have a torn ACL versus a grown person? And then having this person with Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's, like, what does this training model look like for him? I need to challenge his brain and his body at the same time. And so because I was so passionate about learning those things, I knew that that was worth more because I knew a ton of other trainers that weren't anywhere near as passionate about the people or the process of learning. And so naturally I was like, I'm just going to charge more because I feel like I'm worth more, but also because I wanted to be able to justify helping other people. And I never really liked discounting my service. For example, let's say my dad needed personal training or a broke friend of mine that's gained a ton of weight since high school or something like that, right? Instead of me being like, yeah, $25 an hour, just come on. I would just say, I'm going to train you for free once a week because yeah. I'm charging $100 an hour for everybody else. So I'm positioning myself financially in such a way where I have X amount of time to serve the community for those ad hoc opportunities like that present themselves. Whereas if somebody's charging $60 an hour and somebody really needs some help, they're like, man, I wish I could help you, but I don't have the time or the money. For me, however, I could work 30 hours a week training, make $3,000 a week at $100 an hour. And at 25 years old, living in Lakeland, Florida, where the cost of living is relatively low, mm-hmm. like that's really, really, really good money, right? It so is. Like
yeah.
a friend is like, hey, I really need some help. Then I'm saying, hey, I'll train you for free, but you have to show up once a week. If you don't show up one time, like I'm done. Like I'm not going to do this free thing on and off. So yeah, anyways, that was my mindset towards that is like price yourself where you're confident that you deserve, like the value that you feel like you present to the world and to this particular audience, so that you can afford to serve where people can't afford you. Which also leads to, and I know you didn't really ask about this, is like, okay, well, the next question is how do I get to a place where I value myself there? Invest in yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Like I spent so much time, money, and energy on learning about my trade to where I was confident enough. And there's people that are like, Jared, I'm not that confident. Okay, well, learn more. Get some more practice. Get your reps in. Like it took time for me to get there. I didn't just like get my cert and say, all right, well, I'm being $100 an hour now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For me, so I was personal training for a very long time. Like even in the Air Force, I was training like 150 people. And obviously it was like, I was getting paid in the Air Force, but like not like $100 per hour. But it was like so hard working at like a global gym that like, they took a percentage off. And it's just like, yeah, I want to make more money, but obviously there's other people that are pretty cheap, but they just want to get, personal training. So you're kind of like, okay, maybe I'll go for like this rate, mm-hmm. instead of like a higher up rate. And then it's at to the point where like, I realized I'm like, if I need to make $60,000, I need to work 6 days a week, 12 hours, no breaks. And I'm like, this is not, I couldn't do it. So I left, doing it, but I love personal training. Like I would like listen to podcasts, read books, like all that stuff. And it's, I wish I can go back, but I don't even think it's even possible for me now.
Yeah, no, I feel you. And it's like, for me, it's a numbers game. And my mm-hmm. way that my brain works, which is kind of overwhelming sometimes, is like, I quantify everything. And math is just like constantly my brain, there's numbers everywhere. Yep. And so the way that I looked at personal training was like, I had this fear, of course, of like, what if I'm too expensive? But at the end of the day, even let's just say Lakeland, for example, there's, 300,000 people that live in Lakeland, Florida. In order to be a full-time personal trainer, realistically full-time in the training world is like 35 hours a week because you have program design, you have reschedules, you have, people that go late, whatever, right? So 35 hours a week, which the average session's half an hour. So that's 70 sessions a week on average. The average client is two times a week. So the average client is 1 hour a week, right? So I needed 35 clients to technically be full-time. And so when I think about that, I'm like, well, there's 300,000 people that live in this city. and I need 35 to be successful and like full time. That changes my perspective. Cause if I'm at a price where like some people are saying no, well, at least I have 299,970 yeah. more people to go. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yep.
And so instead of like the rat race of trying to keep up with the $50 trainer that obviously is more affordable for many more people, I would have that higher rate, but also have this realistic mindset of like, okay, high standards, but there's so many people here. That's like, you know, if you have an expensive steak restaurant and you're scared that Outback is $20 a steak and you're 50, people are going to buy that $50 steak.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing was I knew how to sell, like, especially in the fitness industry. I'm pretty confident in saying that I'm a hell of a salesperson when it comes to fitness related stuff like gym memberships, personal training.
Yep.
Because I believe in it so much. And I learned from years of experience how to build so much value, like from working in the global gym for so long. It's like, you know, it's survival of the fittest in that industry. Like you either make nothing in that industry or you make a good amount because you're good and you have to learn how to sink or swim. And so I learned how to sell to all different walks of life at a high rate. Like even the health clubs, you know, they're $70-$80 an hour for training, despite what the trainers are making from that, which is not very much.
No.
So I had already learned how to like build value in sale long before asking for money. And so like a lot of the reason for my success as a trainer was once I got them signed up, I was a good trainer, but I was also really, really good at selling people on the process. Like they would come in, do a consultation. I'd walk them through the gym, build a short workout based on their goals that day, but also based on their goals long-term, give them a little bit of, you know, endorphins that first day, but also a challenge to know that they need a trainer. So a lot of psychology involved in that first consultation. And my closing rate was like 90%+. So like, you have to learn how to build value and even maybe recognize that, and this is like a masterclass on selling personal training. So I'll wrap it up here, but like recognize, yes, I do have expensive rates. And, you know, in Lakeland, Florida, again, where the cost of living was so low, I had a sticker shock for many people when I was like, yep, it's $100 an hour. However, I usually recommend half an hour. So that's going to be 55 half an hour. Twice a week, it goes down to 50 an hour. This is what I recommend. It's $50 a session, two times a week. That's $100 a week. It's $433 a month. We bill monthly. You don't have to pay, you know, for 20 sessions up front. What card would you like to put on file? But long before I do all that, I say, what are your goals? Okay, why do you have that goal? And we build, identify the X factor, peel the layers behind the X factor, right? Some people say they want to lose 10 pounds, but in reality, Susie Soccer Mom went to put on her favorite pair of jeans, but she hasn't worn them since last summer. And they don't fit anymore because she gained 10 pounds through the winter. Mm-hmm. And she's about to have a girl's night and she's embarrassed because she can't wear her favorite jeans. And then she comes to the gym the next day and says, hey, I want to lose 10 pounds. And I'm like, well, I know that you want to lose 10 pounds, but why? And so getting her to express, honestly, I felt insecure because I went on a girl's night and couldn't wear my favorite jeans. That's why. Mm-hmm. Like 10 pounds is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But you want to wear your favorite pair of jeans. Let's focus on that. Mm-hmm. Right. What have you been doing? I haven't been doing anything for years. Oh, okay. That's okay too. Let's start slow, right? So like if you can look at the psychological element of why people walk into the gym that day and help them associate that with the work required, because it's going to be hard work. That's what I did. And I loved it. I miss it.
Damn. I should have talked to you like years ago. So did you get like burnt out at personal training at all? Or like, you know, or you just like loving the process, the whole process that you just like kept on, you know, grinding the whole time?
There was periods of time, like in the health club industry, for sure, I was burnt out. But as a personal trainer, I wouldn't say that I generally ever got burnt out, but that's because I quickly transitioned to starting Superfit Foods. So mm-hmm. when I was really like loving training is when I started another company and I had to like, you know, begrudgingly stop training to run Superfit Foods. So it was like, Superfit Food started May of 2015. This is when I was a full-time trainer. So we got like half of my clients signed up on Superfit Foods. That was awesome. But as that client base grew, I mean, I was the total operating CEO of the company, responsible for like every in and out. Like I'm meeting people at Starbucks and signing them up for meal prep. And I'm running to the kitchen and I'm delivering. And so I was like, okay, I need to not cancel any clients, but when people decide not to renew, like I need to let that go. Right. So that was yep. like a process of like, okay, I'm not selling myself. And I, you know, there were people that like were waiting for me to have free time to train just because I was relatively successful. And I'm in a small town too, so people talk positive word of mouth and whatnot.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of had to begrudgingly stop training. And then Superfit Foods got really busy, and we, you know, we ran on a skeleton crew, right? Like for the sake of profitability and figuring it out. Like I didn't really have any experience in that industry. So, and then by October I had left completely. And then by November I moved back to Jacksonville, and by February of the following year, I brought Superfit Foods to Jacksonville.
Okay. So like, what it, like obviously like you're going into like a new you know business with food and stuff like that, so like what was like the learning curve in that whole ordeal of like starting, you know, Superfit Foods?
Yeah, like the whole thing was a learning curve, bro. Mm-hmm. So imagine like 6 years of a learning curve.
Jeez.
So you know it, like that when we started Superfit Foods, I was at a high of my life. And like making really great money, doing something I really love, controlling my schedule. I didn't have any employees to deal mm-hmm. with. And the opportunity my former partner had presented, he was a member at the gym. He owned a local supplement store. And he saw kind of me come into the gym and like very shortly afterwards be very busy. And he was like, hey man, you're very entrepreneurial. We should do something together. And to whole other story, but I had moved to Lakeland to open a gym and that fell through before it even started. And so that's why I started one-on-one training. And so he was like, we should open a gym together. And I was like, at the time, like, I think God really wants me to do something different. Otherwise he would have allowed for me to open up the one previously that I had planned on. And then he was like, what about a meal prep company? The reason why he brought that up was like a couple of reasons. One, it was 2015 and that idea was just getting started. Like it was just kind of becoming popular. And he had a friend in Tampa doing the same thing. I was also a bodybuilder at the time, like a competitive bodybuilder. So I was very much into the meal prep thing. And all my clients would do most of what I said, right? Mm-hmm. So like they were all on meal plans and things like that. And so when he brought that idea up, I thought, man, that would actually be pretty easy. Most of my clients will sign up right away. And so overconfidence is how we started that company.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know now, which is a double-edged sword, I would not start that company today, which is just the irony of ignorance, right? It's like, it's a blessing and a curse. And so I thought, heck yeah, I could sell the crap out of some meal prep. And I did. And lo and behold, you need a whole operation behind the scenes fulfilling these orders. Mm-hmm. And so we went from cooking in my partner's kitchen because he had a nice big house and we had one cook right away. That was my only thing. It was like, I'm not cooking. I'll do everything else. And so we had one cook right away. We had 100 meals a week, and then it became 500 meals a week. So we had to go to the commissary kitchen, and that was still relatively low maintenance. This guy rented out space in his kitchen, and we would use it every like Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then deliveries went out Monday and Thursday morning. So we built the operation, and like I'm very operationally minded. So early stages, it was kind of like, this is working really well for me. Technology wise, we were super behind. I mean, we would take orders and I was writing them in Microsoft Word and sending that via email to a cook. And then we brought another cook on who was actually my brother, super smart dude, worked in the restaurant industry. He moved everything to an Excel sheet and he started building systems in the kitchen where I was building all these external systems for delivery and all that fun stuff. Then we outgrew the commissary kitchen and that's when it got real. So by August, May, June, July, August. By August, in 3 months, we had gotten to like 150 clients. It was, which is
really
growth rate. And the average client's $100 a week of reoccurring revenue. So it's a lot. So we decided to build a kitchen and took $100,000 loan from the bank. And that's when it got real. And me and my partner sat down, like, do we really want to do this? And again, overconfidence, it was like, well, we're crushing it. Why wouldn't we keep doing this? And I was really enjoying the entrepreneurial journey and I was learning a ton because this is a different field for me. And we were changing a lot of lives, man. Like we had diabetics. I remember two in particular. And I'm not super educated on the type of diabetes, but it was like a reversible type of diabetes. So maybe type two.
Type two. Yeah, type two.
So we had two guys that I can remember, like I can picture them, I know their names and everything, that had came off medication after like 6 to 8 weeks of eating our food because we were able to custom build their meals with certain amount of carbohydrates, et cetera. And we made it so convenient. We were the excuse-free platform for eating clean. Mm-hmm. And so I was just loving the journey. We opened up a kitchen and it became kind of a nightmare. But but at that point, there was no turning back. We're over $100,000 in with the bank and taking a small salary. And I quit personal training a lot of my clients. And so it was like, I am building a company. I am hiring people. I am building systems. My brother's running the kitchen. There's a whole story there. So learning curve. It was because we grew relatively quickly. We weren't one of these Bitcoin companies that became $1 billion overnight by any means, like, thank God, in reality. But we grew on average 2 to 3 times our revenue each year. For the first like 3 years, that slowed down. Still had a great growth rate, but that certainly slowed down because multiplying by two gets harder every time.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So we were growing really fast. So we went from that one kitchen, and then I was like, I'm going to go back to Jacksonville because I'm bored in Lakeland. And so we expanded to Jacksonville, and we would launch this delivery model to local gyms throughout North Florida. And we put refrigerators in these gyms. So now our home delivery model expanded to a gym delivery model, and we're marketing to gyms, and I'm learning more about digital marketing, and Facebook ads became really popular. And So I'm every stage, every season of growth, I'm learning new things. We're hiring more people, and I'm learning, oh, wow, this is what it's like to run a company with 3 employees, 5 employees, 10 employees. A lot of our employees are back of the house kitchen people. Those are not people I'm used to working with because I'm used to working in a health club, two totally different cultures, right? Mm-hmm. So I need to learn how to level with these guys and gals, mainly guys in the kitchen. And then I'm building a marketing and customer service staff, mainly women, not because it's just the demographics.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. Yeah.
And so just, oh, wow, now I've got a company with 20 employees, 6 of which are females. Like, what is it like to, you know, there are nuance to how you communicate with different people. And then, of course, over time, like, the world is more sensitive. There are things you can and can't say in the office. You know what I mean? So it's like always learning, you know, because you can go in the kitchen and shoot the shit with these guys. And they're more inappropriate than most people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a gym locker room. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like learning, what does that look like? And what is the right way to do that? And I'm a Christian. So there's even more nuance there of like, what's it like to lead, with God at the center, even though the majority of my employees aren't Christian. So it's just so much learning through every stage. Every part of it was a learning curve, and then deciding to sell, or then COVID, and then deciding to sell. And then selling, right? Like, learning curve. So I lost so much sleep throughout that 6 years. I feel like I've gained so much youth back since selling the company, which is just extraordinary. But yeah, man.
Yeah. You probably got some more hair back too.
I feel like I have. Anyways, like, some of the grays have gone away. Not that my life is like perfect now, because there's no such thing, but it's certainly more stress-free. And I wouldn't take it back for anything, but running a restaurant that ships nationwide, like, we started shipping nationwide, you know, 2017, 2018, something like that. That's a learning curve, dealing with that level of customer service. Broken containers. Do we get new containers? Right. So just so like running a restaurant in general, but running a nationwide, fully customizable meal prep company is, I think, one of the hardest businesses I'll ever be involved in my whole life.
Yeah. I mean, well, you could look at Ice Age Meals too. They closed down. They were on Shark Tank and everything. And, you know, it just wasn't working after a while. And that was a good thing that you sold. So.
Yeah. And, you know, we, to that, it's like, it is a great thing that I sold. I mean, many entrepreneurs will go a whole lifetime without having the opportunity and the luck to be able to do something like that. But, you know, what's important, I think, is like, we didn't sell before a bad time. Like, the company that bought us is thriving. It's a public company based out of Texas. Like, I didn't like sell it and then it like crumbled and I'm like, ha ha, you know, like, it's they're doing well. And they've put, like, when I sold the company, their standard operating procedures and all these manuals on how to run the company and how to grow the company and what that managing that dichotomy looks like. And so, yes, I'm lucky to sell, but they were, in my opinion, lucky to buy as well. Like, it was a really good win-win. I think.
Awesome. But, yeah. So when did CrossFit come to your life?
It's a funny story. So my buddy Ben, I say his whole name, not that it matters, but in high school, and he was super athletic, played all the sports. And right when we started lifting, like chest Monday, back Tuesday, all that fun stuff.
Yep.
his dad owned like a ton of real estate in town and a CrossFit gym. It was like one of the first 50 gyms in the world, CrossFit Lakeland, opened up. And so I was familiar with it. And he was like, hey, man, they do a free drop in on Saturday. You should come. And I'm not an athlete. I skateboarded competitively as a kid. Like I was a pretty good skateboarder as a kid, but we didn't have the money for pads for like traditional sports. Right. So like, and I never went to like summer camp or any of that normal kid stuff. We were just obviously too poor. And so never really gained that level of athleticism that's required to like be interested in CrossFit, like former athletes, military, first responders. Like those were the first groups that like, you know, corralled around that methodology. And so he was like, yeah, I'm like, oh, what is it? He's like, oh, do like rope climbs and kettlebell swings. I'm like, nope, never. No, like you don't bench press and do bicep curls, you know? And so right away I was disinterested. Like we just laughed at people who ran for fun back then. You know what I mean? Like, and that's 2008. So I was introduced in 2008, got interested in like 2015 or 2016 when they first started televising the CrossFit games.
Yep.
I'll say like Rich Froning was the first person I was like, okay, I'm interested in CrossFit because of that. Because no offense to the Spielers or the others, but like they weren't, you know, I wanted to be jacked and shredded and they were more like runner kind of bodies and stuff like that prior, the gymnast runner bodies. And so no offense, obviously, for anyone with a gymnast runner body, but I wanted to be jacked. Yeah. And so that wasn't my forte. And then I watched the games and I'm like, that's amazing. And then I went and tried it. I'm like, that's very hard. So I'm going to just not do that for a little while. And then with Superfit Foods, our expansion model was put fridges in gyms. And so naturally we became ingrained in the CrossFit community because we had over, I think, 20 plus of these double door refrigerators where people would pick up their orders in CrossFit gyms throughout Northeast Florida and throughout Central Florida, like in the Lakeland area. So I became well acquainted with the CrossFit community, sort of had one toe in, nine toes out kind of thing, professionally. And we'd set up a booth at the open. I would have enough staff to where we could have like two or three different tents and food at the open whenever the open had 5 weeks. And, you know, gyms would do events and drink Budweisers afterwards and stuff like the old school CrossFit days. And so we would always do that. And I would end up doing like, I would cherry pick one workout that I'm like, well, I can do those things. I can burpee and pull up or whatever. And then I would just get mashed. You know what I mean? Like, cause I had no gymnastics ability. I'd end up doing strict bar muscle ups and, you know, wall balls or something like that. And just be like, I'm never doing that again. I'm wearing Vans or something too. Right. Before they were like the athletic style Vans. So that was my experience for years in CrossFit. So I loved it from afar, but was still in love with bodybuilding. I have a knack, like physically, I did pretty well at bodybuilding because of just my genetics. And I just, you know, it was like a sport that I gravitated towards because of a natural inclination for looking that way. Mm-hmm. And I didn't necessarily love the sport of bodybuilding, but I did pretty well and I competed in some fun stuff like that. So then I went on to powerlifting when I got bored with bodybuilding. Pretty much reached my cap there quickly, like within a year. Just meaning I knew I wouldn't deadlift more, bench more, or squat more without drugs. And so didn't really want to do that. Not that I had never done drugs, for what it's worth, anybody listening, I had done it as a bodybuilder for a little while. And so, this is circa like 2013. So don't drop into a class and be like that steroid user, you know, it's 10 years ago. But, anyway, so I did powerlifting clean and was like, I'm never getting stronger. Like this is it for me. So I stopped doing that because that wasn't fun anymore either. Did a Spartan race and realized, holy crap, I'm so unathletic, but I love throwing some things around and jumping over some things. And so I was like, I need to run more. And that's 2017 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 2019, I signed up for a triathlon with a buddy, had to learn how to swim, started doing some more circuit training, HIIT style training. And then we were like, let's just go to CrossFit, bro. And there's a handful of really cool CrossFits in Jacksonville, especially Jacksonville Beach. So there's one that was like right off a major road, a block from the ocean. We were just like, let's go to CrossFit Black Hive. And so we did. We signed up April of 2019. And, you know, that was it for me. I've lost like 20 pounds since then.
Nice.
You know, I was like 100, not 100. I was like 200, 205. Lost like 10 to 15, 20 pounds over that time. And I fluctuate now, but ended up doing the triathlon and just stayed at CrossFit a couple of the guys left and I just stayed and loved the community. And now it was really cool because it actually did help the business, because not only do I have fridges in these gyms, but now I'm a part of that community. So that's my CrossFit story. By the way, I'm not good at short stories, so
it's okay. All good. Don't worry about it.
When I get asked a question, I just see like a tree of places to go with answers, and I'm like, what's the smallest tree that I can build here?
All good. I mean, so you've said you're an entrepreneur, and like I think that like with the entrepreneurial space is like, I don't like that word entrepreneur for me personally, because I think just everyone uses it.
Yeah, it's outplayed for sure.
Yeah. And I just think it's just like, I just say, you know, I have a podcast and like a t-shirt business. I don't say like entrepreneur or anything like that. Is that kind of what you think too?
Yeah, but it's like sometimes when people ask me what I do, it depends on the person and how much time I have to the question and their real level of interest. But sometimes if I can tell that this is like super small talk, I might just say I'm a fitness entrepreneur. You know what I mean? Like,
okay. Yeah.
But if they're actually interested, I might go into what I, because it is like long-winded whenever you are a fitness entrepreneur to answer all the different questions, or not just a fitness entrepreneur, one in general. So, I try to avoid the question. A lot of times I'll just say I'm a consultant, because that's also very general. So,
yeah. And you also have a consultant company too. Is it a marketing consultant company?
Yeah. Like business and marketing. Yeah. Consulting. Yeah.
How did you get involved with that?
So 2017, started Superfit Foods in 2015. And, I'm the type of person that when I learn something, I love to teach it. Mm-hmm. And so through social media, through word of mouth, people had known me as someone, I mean, I'm one of those people that when I post on social media, it's like a mini blog, right? Like, I just want to share with the world what I'm learning. And so, Superfit had gotten some success publicly, like, you know, people were seeing what we were doing, and naturally random people began to reach out like, hey, I've got this business idea, or hey, I'm running this business. I'd love to grab coffee and pick your brain. And so early stages, I was like, sure. And get coffee. I have no ambitions at the time of like, I guess I didn't have like the confidence of just starting a consulting company, but really after having a couple coffees and being like, I can't just do this for free. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like at the trainer, someone's like, oh man, come train me. You're like, okay, well, the first session's free. After that, like I got it, here's my rates. And so after a handful of people were like, hey, I'd love to get coffee and talk about business, I'm like, you know, I'm actually consulting these people, and I should have a legitimate business structure, really just to build them separate from Superfit Foods and not to take cash, because I wanted to be a professional. And so that's where E3 came. So in 2017, I started E3. It was really super behind the scenes. Like, it was just a legitimate way to build people for helping them. And E3 stands for Encourage, Educate, and Empower.
Okay.
And so started E3 Business Solutions in 2017 and didn't pursue anything. All my clients over the years have been word of mouth. And it's when I was running Superfit, I would turn people down at E3 because of course I didn't necessarily have a ton of free time. Mm-hmm. But then sold Superfit, of course, 2021, and E3 has evolved into being more of what I do. It's still very part-time for me because I don't market myself. It's like the when there's a unique opportunity and someone asks me a random question and I begin to answer that question, they're like, oh my gosh, I wish I had someone to help me with this. And I'm like, well, you know, I actually do have a consulting agency. I do this professionally. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, wow. So I could pay you. And I'm like, yeah, you could. In theory, we should talk about it more. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that's usually how it works. Or someone watches a podcast like this and they're struggling with their business, and then they DM me and ask me how it works or something like that. But yeah. So that's, I would say 50% of what I do now professionally is E3 business consulting. And that's when people ask what kind, general business consulting. I don't necessarily discriminate. I have some unique businesses that I work with. Mm-hmm. Primarily my passion is in the fitness industry, but I think if you understand business at the molecular level, which I believe that I have a pretty good understanding of, you can broadly apply it to almost any industry. You know, finding the right people, pursuing the right mission,
yep.
Like building processes around that mission. Is that mission profitable in the long term and the short term? Like, those are generalized business concepts. And so if you can apply those with the right people, like, you can be successful, whether you're in tech or in fitness or in food or whatever.
Yeah. And also finding that purple cow too.
The purple cow.
Yeah. Have you read that book?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I was a quick read. I was like, it was interesting, but yeah,
quick
it was
the best. I mean, like you have, and then you have, Who Moved My Cheese? You have, Raving Fans. Like these are all just illustrative short reads, that are like actually really impactful. Like the impact per page is far greater than some of these 500 page, like, you know.
Yeah, you'll pick like one thing out of that 500 pages. You're like, oh, okay, I could use this and apply that. And it's just like, okay, I wasted more time on the 500 compared to, you know, just like a 150 page book, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You took a year to read something that got you just as much value as something that took you like 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. So what made you decide to start the Zelos games?
So I had sold Superfit in March of 2021, and prior to even selling or exiting the company, I knew I wanted to take like a year road trip around the country.
Oh yeah. I've got to ask you that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the plan. And throughout the process of selling the company, I was also selling like a bunch of my furniture. I had like a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo near the beach in Jacksonville and, lived there by myself. So I had a bunch of stuff, and, so I had to get rid of all that stuff, put all my stuff in storage. Anyways, went on a cross-country road trip. And even though I knew I wanted to take somewhat of a sabbatical, even though I was still consulting a couple of clients, very part-time, my mind is like, what's next? What's next? Like, that's just how my brain works. I'm sitting at the coffee shop writing down what's next. And patiently observing my thoughts and thinking through what do I want to do next. And just from having conversations and communication with some higher level athletes in the space that I had gotten acquainted with from even prior to my road trip. And then especially on my road trip, because I'm dropping into CrossFit gyms all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, COVID was really tough on CrossFit Games athletes all over the world because it became this online competition.
Yep.
And then afterwards it became really tough because people from Australia couldn't even come, you know, get visas to come to the games. And so I looked at, okay, there's this problem in the sport where travel is an issue. What if someone started an online competition for cash prize in the off season to really supplement the CrossFit Games season, or to support it? And what if that company repurposed a lot of the online content for entertainment purposes, just, you know? And so I bounced around this idea of an online CrossFit competition for cash prize. And of course, this is 2 years ago. So the idea seemed even better back then than it does now, because we were still very much like coming out of the COVID stage. Like, I didn't know if live competition would become what it was once. And it is now again, very similar to what it was. So that was the original inspiration. I shared that idea with some people and the majority loved the idea. So that's where the Zelos Games was birthed, right? And so the mission was to create more earning for athletes and entertainment for fans, because I recognized in the sport, there's not a whole lot of earning opportunities and there's not a whole lot of entertainment opportunities for fans. And if there was earning opportunities, you had to travel across the country, across the world, spend an arm and a leg, save for 10 days. And even if you get 12th place, you might end up net negative $3,000 or something like that.
Yep.
I wasn't really intending on trying to change that, because that's how it's built currently. But I wanted to add another opportunity where athletes could maybe make some money from the comfort of their own gym, just like the Open, where there's more financial incentive. And then hopefully the fans would be interested enough in supporting that mission to where there's like a financial model. So the first year was all online. The second year we transitioned to have a live element, because I feel like the first year we fell short on reaching that like entertainment for fans goal, because all online content is still fun, but it's nothing like live competition. So we had the live invitational last year in Las Vegas, which was a blast.
Yeah. And it looked like it was a lot of fun too. So, I mean, you had like this past year, you had like Hiller as the head judge, which was like obviously cool, because like it was kind of like almost put your money where your mouth is when it comes to like the video content and like him being a head judge. And then, you know, you have like Savon and their crew like filming it too. So, and I know you guys through the other podcast, you guys were talking like month to month about like, you know, how this thing was going to be set up. And and then also, so you had kind of had like the red flag challenge flag on this year. So what was the reason for that? And, you know, who decided that was going to be a, you know, a part of the Zells games?
The reason for that was we don't know why there's not a reason. Like, we don't rephrase. The reason why we did the challenge flag is because not there wasn't a real flag, but the reason why we did challenges in the competition is because we don't understand why there's not challenges in the normal sport of CrossFit at the semifinals and at the games. Judges make mistakes, and athletes should have the opportunity to refute those mistakes professionally. So that was really it. Very simply, it was like, hey, all of us agree that the games semifinals should have this and they don't. So why don't we give it a try? And then maybe we'll learn the hard way why they don't have it. Fortunately, we didn't. It worked out really, really well. But I can't tell you who proposed the idea. Maybe Hiller. Maybe Brian Friend. I don't know that I'm creative enough to be the first one to say that.
Okay.
but I do know that everyone else, it was on board right away. And I'm sort of like the cautious optimist. And of course, I'm the proprietor, I guess you could say. So of course, I was like, well, how's this going to work? And it looked a lot different at first until like the final product was very simplified, because we had to make it as simple as possible, as easy to truly execute. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was, I believe we gave them one challenge per day over 2 days. And if they use a challenge and they, you know, it's not reversed, then they lose that challenge. If they use a challenge and it is reversed, they keep it, just like in professional sports.
Yeah.
And it worked really well. It was actually really cool.
Yeah. That'd be hilarious. Almost like a Bill Belichick of like, you know, pulling up his pant leg and just taking the flag out of the sock and just like throw it. If you just did at the Zells games, like just like have a flag and like everyone, like every, you know, person that's doing the competition in their sock and just huck it.
That would be fun. we need to just like strap little red flags around the athlete's arm or something like that.
Exactly.
Right. Basically the rule was on the field of play, before you leave the field of play, you have to decide, am I challenging that call? Right. So if there was a series of egregious no reps during your thrusters and you're just so frustrated, it's like, don't get frustrated. Just wait till the end and challenge that call and let us know, maybe not the specific repetition, but let us know it was the second round of thrusters and the judge gave me 3 no reps and I'm challenging 2 of them. We're like, okay, let's watch the film, fast forward to that second round and look for what he or she is talking about. That's basically how it worked for us. But if they left the field of play, they couldn't come back and be like, hey, my judge had mentioned, like, mm-hmm. no, it needs to be right away. There's like no peanut gallery, no like someone DMing you and being like, hey, I saw from this angle, like you need to challenge it right away so we can be quick.
Yeah. So I don't know if I got the name right. Alex Uzan had the handstand walk this year, and I guess her family was recording it and actually saw her put her 2 hands down. And so that's helped to kind of help them like do the challenge flag.
So basically we had multiple camera angles.
Yeah.
We had basically Savon was the broadcaster for the Zealous games, and Hiller had like our quote unquote official camera, like centered, on the field of play, but Alex was kind of over here.
Yeah.
She was in it, but like we couldn't see at an angle that would be clear. But we had Savon had 5 or 6 people with iPhones filming the whole. So we used, I don't remember which angle it was. I mean, it was obviously like a side angle because Alex was in like the first lane or the fourth lane, whichever one was, you know, if you're facing the field of play, she was the far left. It was a really interesting call. So had to be 25-foot unbroken handstand walk for 6 reps, I think, 150 feet. Mm-hmm. And it was a race to the finish, and it was her last one, and she began to really struggle. She's so strong. So she can walk on her hands with her elbows bent if she wants to. Towards the end, she was. And so she fell going through that finish line, you could say, right? Because the handstand walk is completed. Let's say like the camera, this line for the camera is like the line for the handstand walk. Mm-hmm. It's completed when both palms are beyond that line, right? So if I get my hands to the ground right here, that's a final rep, right?
Yep.
However, the rules state, and we really copied these from CrossFit, that if your feet touch the ground before your hands cross the line, that's a no rep. And so she went back because the judge called a no rep. She went back and completed it. She challenged that. We found the right angle. And what we found was that her hands had crossed the line prior to her feet touching the ground, which we have this screenshot of her literally falling in midair. Mm-hmm. And her forearm touched the ground, but there's no rules against the forearm touching the ground. And so it begs the question really for CrossFit, to say, should we rephrase that to hands must pass the line before any extremity touches the ground? Or do we keep it and say hands must pass the line before your feet touch the ground? Because realistically, the knees could touch the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so there is, I think, some an update that needs to, like, for our competition, we will be more thorough with verbiage in the future. If we care, like, I don't know if we care about the forearm. It might be interesting to see someone fall to the forearm and push back up and finish a handstand lock. Like,
yeah, that'd be impressive. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So per the rules, she won that challenge, right? Because we can't change the language because of a challenge. That would be completely unprofessional and unfair.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have this screenshot of her just like falling in midair. Her feet are not touching the ground, but her hand are beyond the line. And it was really cool because it, in a normal competition, that would never happen and she would lose. Mm-hmm. You know, she had to go back. It was like 30 more seconds. Like, that's a dramatic shift. But she fought for that win and she deserved it based on the rules and the standards. And the judge did a really great job because we're talking about a millisecond here. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a judging error. It wasn't an athlete error. It was simply a microsecond, like fractions of a moment where she was actually right and the judge was actually wrong, but only a freeze frame could have told us that.
Yeah.
And so I think the sport could use it. And I believe there are some conversations behind the scenes trying to lobby for something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So do you have like anything that you want to add for like next year? Cause obviously like each year you're learning how, like, you know, your competition works. Is there anything that you kind of want to add to for next year to make it better?
We want more competitors. Last year we had 12 men, 12 women. This year the goal is 16 men, 16 women. I don't ever really want to get like hundreds by any means, but a little bit more and more spectators. More workouts, right? So we had 4 workouts, 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, we worked really hard on creating a well-rounded program design for 4 workouts, like a fully balanced test for 4 workouts. It's very hard. And Kiefer was our head programmer. Kiefer's so smart. Like, in retrospect, I mean, even going into it, I was really confident in our programming, but in retrospect, like, mainly Kiefer did such a great job of building a test. Long story short, I want to add more workouts regardless. So I think we'll do 6 like scored events this year. And that's mainly a few of the main changes is potentially 2 more scored events, potentially 4 more men, 4 more women for the live event. And the goal online is really just the same, but to grow it. Like, we had 10 age groups, we had elite, we had RX. We just want to see those grow. And I think we'll have an open division this year.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So are you looking to like move it to a different area too for like space wise?
Not necessarily. That's one of the biggest problems. One of the biggest struggles of competitions is affording the space where you host it. Mm-hmm. And it's a double-edged sword because if you can get a huge space, then you can get more spectators, means you can get more ticket money and you can get more sponsors because there's more spectators. But at the same time, the gym, although there is a cost to hosting it at this gym, I have a great relationship with the owners of Camp Rhino. We had a blast hosting it there. I loved the intimate setting.
Yep.
So for the foreseeable future, especially this year, we plan to host it at Camp Rhino again. 10,000 square foot facility can fit up to 500 people. So that's the goal, really, is like, you know, this year, if we're bursting at the seams, because honestly, last year we had, I think, 250 tops. So we didn't hit the goal of like spectator wise. So I would hate to have a building that's 3 times the size, you know? So it was perfect for the athletes. It was very intimate. Like, the spectators loved it. The brands loved it. The cameramen, like, the coverage was incredible. So no goal of changing the venue quite yet. But of course, it would be great if we outgrew it and we had no choice but to pick a bigger venue, because then the money's there and the people are there. So it's almost a no-brainer.
Yeah. And I found out you actually have, you're an agent too. For, is it 3 people now, or do you grow it a little bit more?
Grew it a little bit more. The agency is very much like how I operate my consulting business. I talk about it when people want to talk about it. And then inevitably, randomly, an athlete is interested, just like a potential consulting client is interested. And I just share with them how I do what I do, from learning a little bit from others and then from building my own processes based on my experience in business. So I work with 5 athletes now.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So, do you, obviously, like, Arian Lowen's one of your, I think she was your first person. So
I absolutely like, she's awesome. Like I, you know, I, every time I listen to her on a podcast or just like, you know, watch her on like a video, it's like, it's, she's super nice. And she's like always available to talk to people too, which is super cool. So how did that get together?
Yeah. Shout out to Ariel, man. She's like the people's champ.
Yeah.
But so the Zalos games first year when I, you know, serendipity is this wonderful, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was acquainted with Jason, who owns X Endurance, or he's CEO of X Endurance, owns Lab Management. But at the time I didn't know about Lab Management or anything like that. I just knew about X Endurance, the supplement company. And I knew Jason, we were like friends on social media. We would DM back and forth from time to time. Seemed like a great guy. I guess maybe he thought the same of me. So we just stayed in contact. I thought of the Zalos games and I messaged him out of nowhere. I think he liked a photo. And I was like, oh, let me hit up Jason. And I said, hey, would you be interested in sponsoring the Zalos games? It's an online competition I'm thinking about starting. He was like, yes, but also let me put you in touch with Cooper. And so Cooper Marsh was like Jason's partner at Lab Management. He had brought Cooper on as an agent, and Cooper just crushed it. So he's kind of the main guy at Lab Management. And so me and Cooper got acquainted. Cooper introduced me to a handful of athletes, like digitally, like, you know, introducing them to the Zalos games and stuff like that. Anyways, throughout that process, hosted the Zalos games, Ariel Lowen won it. And I did a bunch of debriefs with the athletes that won the competition, at least the ones that spoke English.
Yeah.
And just to get feedback, what did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? And Ariel and me just, we got along well. She was really helpful with giving her feedback. And she's a Christian. I'm a Christian. I remember her at the CrossFit games the year prior and people in the stands being like, Ariel, wearing like these white t-shirts where they just drew Ariel Lowen on them. So I knew who she was, and she was a sleeper in the industry, honestly.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like she won 13th at the games. And so I looked into her story. She had a really interesting story. So her and I had a conversation, and this is prior to me being an agent. I said, Ariel, you don't have representation. You should really pursue representation. I think you're leaving a lot on the table. Like maybe you won't make millions, but you know, I don't think she was making anything at the time. So like anything's better than nothing, right? So she reached out to Lab, and that's when Lab reached out to me, like, why don't you work with Ariel? And I thought that's a perfect way to start. Because I didn't necessarily just want to be an agent for the sake of being an agent, like calling myself that and not actually having a successful case study. And so because me and Ariel have these shared values, and because I had a passion for helping her, because she wasn't like switching agents. You know what I mean? Like, we could both learn together. And if I ended up really sucking, no loss on her end. And if she ended up actually, she just needed to continue to do what she's doing, which she does great.
Yeah.
So it was really on me. Like if I suck at this thing, she can go with someone else. And if I'm good at it, then I get to learn and maybe replicate that later on. And so I didn't have any ambitions of working with others for a long time. I wanted to really prove to myself that I was good at this thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I'm necessarily good, but I've had some success with her, and she's done really well for herself, you know, because obviously a lot of her brand partnerships are built because of her athletic prowess and her personality. So I would say she made it kind of easy for me, but anyway, a couple people reached out and I began to work with a couple more people. And so now I'm honored to work with a couple more athletes. Caitlin Van Ziel out of Australia, who's number one in Oceania right now, going into the quarterfinals, which is so exciting. So exciting. She was at the games the past 2 years on a team, and she went to the games individually the year before that. And so just got this great track record. She's working with Justin Kotler at Underdogs Athletics, which is how we serendipitously got introduced. Sasha Nieves, you know, technically second fittest in South America, fittest in Argentina, now working with the Proven team. You know, picked as a favorite coming out of South America, going to the games. Riley Beebe, who's a teenager, right? So we're not like aggressively pursuing contracts left and right. Really the focus is to make sure that she's as taken care of as she can be, and that she's not maybe being taken advantage of by brands and things like that. Me and her dad developed a relationship at the games. We just met randomly in the gym, and he ended up being a parent of an elite athlete. So we stayed in touch and ended up working together. And then Andre Houdé out of Europe.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Just a genius of a person, and a really cool dude to work with. So yeah, those are my current clients that I get to work with. Yeah, it's it's really fulfilling.
Yeah. So are a lot of like companies reaching out to them asking for like promo codes and stuff like that? Like how does that work? They just say like a company reaches out to like Ariel Lowen, and then does she send the information over to you to kind of look it over, and then you go back to them? Like how does it work for, you know, the athlete agent to, you know, business?
Yeah. I can't speak to generally how it works because, I don't know what all the other agents are doing, but I know what I do, and it's not like Ariel or Andre are getting DMs left and right from all these brands and then they're just sending them to me. Cause honestly, at the end of the day, if that's how it worked, then they wouldn't really need me too much.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time building relationships, doing outbound communication, trying to match brands with the person I'm working with. So with Kate, for example, we looked at what are all the brands in Australia that she really meshes well with, that her values align with, that
yeah,
see her promoting. I could see her on the website of this coffee company or this shoe company or whatever, right? So we start, what I do is I try to start endemically, like, okay, Sasha's from South America. What are some South American brands where we can create a win-win relationship? Same with Europe and Andre, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, sometimes a company will message Kate or Ariel and she'll send that to me, and then I will communicate with that company and say, hey, thank you so much for your interest. I'd love to jump on a call and hear more about your brand. I did some research. I'd love to hear what you're interested in doing with so-and-so. So that's kind of how it works. The promo codes is great, like, but at the end of the day, my ambition is to build a living for these athletes, but okay, a justifiable living. We're not just going to ask for a bunch of money for no reason. We're going to try to create an equal exchange, mm-hmm, but sometimes a promo code is a part of that for sure. Really the goal is like to make sure that they're not just pushing promo codes, like that we have, you know, partnerships with these brands where we can build together. Cause a lot of the companies in CrossFit are small.
Yeah. Very small. Yeah.
So yeah. So there's a lot of nuance to it though. Every conversation looks different. You know, a conversation with a shoe company is not going to be the same as a conversation with a grip company, or a thumb tape company versus a supplement company, right? Like it's all like learning about the product that they sell, trying to identify what their markets are. Does their market align with the athlete's current market? Are they trying to expand their market? So does my athlete have a different market that they could begin to market to, whatever, right? So like a lot of just like boring business stuff to people that don't like it, but fun business stuff to me.
Yeah. Is there any company that you would like to get into the CrossFit space to help out athletes and maybe, you know, make their brands a little bit bigger? Or companies you'd like to work with?
There's a lot, man, but I feel like it would be nice. The first company that came to mind was Gatorade. Not that that's like my final answer, but like there's these big brands that are in big sports that, like, you know, like Monster/ Rank came into CrossFit, and that's great too, because although some people have kickback on that, it's like we need money.
Mm-hmm.
Like sport needs money, yeah, right? Like, it's like, how does anything grow? It needs to eat, you know, like, so you gotta feed the thing, and this a sport eats money. But so like when I look at a thing like Gatorade, it's this, people are drinking it no matter what anyways, whether it's powder or it's the zero calorie or it's the regular or it's the new energy thing or it's the Gatorade protein bars. Like they just have this sport brand that CrossFit could really use, and they have the finances to come in and be supportive without expecting a short-term ROI. Mm-hmm. Some of the companies in CrossFit, which this is not a bad thing, they need to see a short-term ROI in order to justify continuing to support athletes.
Yep.
Their budgets are built on their current revenue. They don't have billions of dollars in investments, and they're not a public company or whatever. So, and then I think of Nike, like Nike was and is in the space to a degree. But Nike is one of the most successful companies in the world, and they build their brand based off of elite sports. And I think CrossFit is the most impressive sport in existence, in my opinion. And I think that Nike could do better, by being more involved in the sport. So mm-hmm. That's another thought too, but there are plenty of other companies, Kind Bar, right? Like you don't really see any CrossFit athletes promoting Kind Bar. A lot of CrossFit athletes promote CrossFit endemic brands, like brands that are birthed within CrossFit. I would like to see more of those external brands that like health influencers or fitness influencers or like, you know, Globo Gym style athletes are promoting. Like it would be nice if they were in CrossFit too. Mm-hmm. But they just, CrossFit has to prove that it's worth it, honestly, because that's an investment at the end of the day. So it's just a long rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah. And you also need people to kind of, you know, get involved, not get involved, but like understand like how CrossFit works. Cause obviously like you have people that are from global gyms that are like, oh, that's not even a pull up, you know, that's like a chest bar pull, like kipping. And that's like, that's not even a, like not even working anything. And so you just need to get people to understand what CrossFit really is too, to kind of help out.
Yeah. And it's at the end of the day, it's business. It's all about business, especially to these big brands. They didn't get there by not measuring ROI and looking at KPIs and fun business acronyms. So like Snickers, for example, sponsored Brooke. I'm speculating, they didn't sponsor Brooke. I'm sure they did like a one-time thing, but like I'm speculating, but I guarantee Snickers was like, let's try out CrossFit. Who's the most popular CrossFitter out there? And Brooke was high on that list, if not the highest, right? So mm-hmm. they were like, let's give her money to promote our new protein bar, see how it goes. And then we might try the micro influencer strategy. And when I say micro influencer, it's like 20,000 to 100,000 followers. Brooke has like a million, right? So, and maybe they were like, wow, her ROI is crazy. Let's start giving some other athletes money. Or maybe they were like, man, that's not really what we wanted to see. We're going to pause on the CrossFit thing. Like, that's typically how it works from a bigger business perspective.
Yeah.
So we have to continue to build value in the sport, so other companies will want to come also add value and gain value in return. It's about a value exchange, long mm-hmm. story short.
Yeah. So we're getting close to the end. So one other question I have. So I heard you have a Rivan, the pickup truck, the Rivan, whatever, is it Rivan?
Rivian.
I'm sorry. So I've always been fascinated in those trucks. So like why'd you buy one? And you know, how do you like it?
That's a funny story. So when I sold the company, I was like, all right, well, I'm about to be wealthier than, you know, I ever have been. What should I do with my money? And I thought, okay, well, in a couple of years, my truck at the time will be an older truck. So let me invest in a new car. I don't need it right away. I knew I wanted an electric vehicle and I wanted a truck. So I found the Rivian and it wasn't going to come out for a while. So I just, you know, put whatever down to get it whenever it came out. So finally by December of last year, it came out, they delivered it to me. And in theory, it's a really cool truck, but Rivian, the company, has a lot of work to do. I ended up giving it back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. You expect to get Chick-fil-A customer service and you get McDonald's. And at the end of the day, when you buy an electric vehicle, you are buying a piece of technology. It's not like Ford where it's tried and true. And then if it has an oil leak, just take it, drop it off for a day, they'll fix it. Like they're still figuring things out at Rivian. And it died a couple of times. They couldn't diagnose what was wrong with the battery. I had to get a rental car. Like the battery died. Like it went from 30 miles left to 2 miles left in like a blink of an eye. So I ended up breaking down in the middle of Oklahoma. I had to get it. Like just some nightmare stories. And they just were not willing to do the right thing on the customer service side. So I ended up having to make some phone calls and get them to give me my money back. So it's very unfortunate because I loved the vehicle. Like it's mm-hmm. like, it was the type of relationship where like when things are good, they're great. But when they're bad, you need to be as far away from it as possible. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It was a toxic relationship. and I'm bummed, but I haven't bought anything new, but I'm getting a Bronco. I wish I had a better Rivian story though.
Dude, those Broncos are nice. My wife has one and those things are nice.
Yeah. So that's probably what I need to do something in the next week or so.
Okay. I recommend, my wife has the, what is
like
it called?
Wild Track, like the bigger.
Yeah. She has the big one. It's a convertible and it's like a beachcomber one kind of deal. So yeah, that thing's pretty sick.
Yeah. I like the Bronco. It's, you know, we'll see. Just the electric thing for me, I'm going to have to wait on the world to catch up because that mm-hmm. was, but honestly, it's better for Teslas. Tesla has its own network of chargers and everything, but Rivian is a little bit different story.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So we have some final questions. Obviously, it's kind of like close, like kind of
leaning towards the middle of the year, but do you have any goals, like personal or business-wise, you want to accomplish by the end of the year?
Yeah, man, going into every year, I set a ton of goals. Like, I have a ton of goals. I break my goals up in different ways: personal, professional, financial, and play. So play is like, I want to bungee jump. I want to see 2 concerts. Like, so I have a ton of goals, and it just keeps me in a rhythm of not getting too hyper-focused on business and side of personal, right? So personal, I want to do 3 triathlons. I want to clean and jerk 315. I want to snatch 275, right? So I've got some like things there. But professionally, I wrote a book a couple years ago and published
it. I bought it, by the way. Awesome. It's coming today.
I hope you enjoyed it. It's super quick, easy read. It was meant to be that way. It's like 110 pages, probably. You could read it in 2 hours. But I'd like to launch an audiobook. So I'm kind of behind the scenes putting that together. I'd like to relaunch the journal. So I came out with a journal a couple of years ago, but I've personally used it countless times. So I want to launch a better one with better material and a little like bookmark thing. So there's some entrepreneurial stuff I'd like to do. I have some financial goals professionally. Like, you know, it's cool as an agent, if you reach your financial goals, like that means that you're making, you're helping someone else make some, like, you know, a certain amount of money. So it's kind of motivating for me. So I have a bunch. They're all measurable, specific, attainable, realistic, time-based. Those are some of the specific ones, but yeah. Read, I think, 20 books this year, launch the audiobook, launch a new journal, get X amount for these athletes. Do the Zalos games again successfully, and be able to build a model that can be repeatable. So my goals.
Awesome. Anything with the podcast?
I've thought about, like, because obviously we shelved Athlete Stories prior to last year's Zalos games, and we have not picked it back up. So I've considered it. I've actually had some conversations with different brands within the CrossFit space to potentially partner up on the podcast to build something better. I want something, like, I loved Athlete Stories, but there was just something missing about it that I need to add. And so I'm working on what that looks like. But I guess you could say the goal is to get the podcast back up and running.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Yeah, because I listened to it. It was very good. So I know there was like 3 renditions kind of deal. So you started like who you are, and then you talked about like nutrition and stuff like that, and then you went to the Athlete Stories. And so it's kind of cool to see how it grows from, you know, when you first started to, you know, now.
Yeah, I've changed the name like 3 times.
Yeah. I noticed that too. So next question is, what's your favorite book? It can be like fiction or nonfiction or whatever.
Well, I'm a Christian, so the answer would be the Bible. But without, like, that answer aside, and not just because I'm a Christian, I truly enjoy reading the Bible. It's a fascinating story of how the world, anyways. First one that came to mind is How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yep, good book.
That's more of like a sales and business book. I read so many, I mean, like, you know,
so, yeah, it's a good amount.
And then there's a couple more in my bedroom. So love to read. One of my recent favorites that I reread is The Count of Monte Cristo. Just incredible. Way better than the movie, even though the movie is incredible. But man, if I were to recommend like one random book right off the bat, that's like pretty easy to read and fascinating to read, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, something like that. So those few came to mind, but you know, it's really like, I have all these business books I could recommend, Christian leadership books, self-help books, psychology and mental health. I just love to read about different things depending on the time of year and what's going on in my brain and my life.
Nice. So there's a book I'm reading right now. It's called Make Noise. So it's about like podcasting, of how to like set up your podcast, interview better and stuff like that. I'll send it to you later. But yeah, it's like a 200-page book, and it's like super informative. And it's like, I'm reading it, I'm like, oh my God, like, why didn't I think about, you know, asking these questions for people?
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love that. Yeah. I mean, like, typically when I learn a new thing, I'll try to find a book about that thing. Like, before I bought my first house, I bought, I don't even, How to Invest in Real Estate book. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Read the whole thing, checked off all the, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Yep. So I like that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll send that over. All right. So, what's something that you like to do that nobody really knows much about?
pretty transparent. So, and I put everything on my Instagram story, but, what's something I like? I like to draw and paint. You know, only a few people know about that, but prior to fitness like that, you know, when I was a pothead, like I was an artist and planned on going to college for painting and drawing. And so, when I quit smoking weed, I lost a good bit of my creativity. So I try to draw and paint, you know, once or twice a year. And so, that's something most people don't know about me. I'll show you a piece of work I did a couple years ago.
All right. Oh, nice. It's a good one. Damn. That's impressive.
Thanks, man. So, yeah, it's like a, I love to do it. It just requires so much time and energy and focus.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So I'm a graphic designer by, I went to college for a graphic design degree. So I know how long it takes for like all that stuff to, you know, work out. And so, yeah, that's awesome. Is there any other art pieces that you're looking to do?
I mean, I started this piece last year. I got kind of frustrated and just shelved it. It's a pointillism piece of John Lennon's face. Mm-hmm. And the Beatles are my favorite band. So most people don't know that either. So like, it, you know what pointillism is? It literally, you're just taking, like you're drawing an entire, you know.
It's yeah,
like
this, and all dots, right?
Dots.
Yep.
And I just was like, I didn't know how long this was going to take.
Yeah.
So I got a little frustrated, but I would like to finish that. But I love realism. As you can tell, like I painted an octopus and I love like underwater stuff. But there's like an elephant piece I want to do. I've got like the bones drawn out. Because I really like just drawing with pencil and either doing all black and white, like shade with a pencil or a pen, or painting it with colors. And so, but when you start to add color, you're like, man, it looked really cool before I messed it up with this color. So yeah, you know, maybe some more realism with either beach theme or like nature. I don't know why I like elephants, but like when you draw it, there's just so much detail to an elephant. Like they have wrinkles in every part of their whole being, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. So those are some of my like thoughts.
Okay. Okay, cool. So, what is in your gym bag?
Everything, bro. I have a Haven gym bag. You know, shameless plug here, but like, it's at the gym now because I live 2 minutes from the gym and I coach part-time at the gym now, but, literally everything. I'm like 33 going on 70. So I've got, man, wrist wraps, straps, sweatbands. I've got like some pre-workout. I've got thumb wrap. I've got like a rad roller thing to like work out spikes. I've got a vibrating gun. I've got a vibrating foam roller. I've got two belts, like a heavy belt and a light belt. I've got knee sleeves, elbow sleeves, shoulder sleeve. I've got headbands. I've got my AirPods. I've got an airwave mouthpiece, bro. Like this is like,
that's everything. Shit. That's crazy.
I know. So have you ever seen, it's funny, the Big Comfy Couch? It's a show like,
I have not. Childhood.
So it's, I think it's like a Canadian show too, but, this girl, the whole show takes place and she's like on a couch and she tells these stories and has friends come over, I think. And like, she's like, oh yeah, this one time. And she pulls whatever it is out of the couch. She'll pull like her friend out of the couch. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, that's cool.
That's my gym bag. People are like, oh, I wish I had some voodoo floss. I'm like, hold please.
Hold, yep, yep.
And I pull out the voodoo floss. They're like, man, Jared, do you have any extra wristbands? Hold please. You know, like, it's like, oh, pre-workout with or without caffeine? You know, like,
yeah.
It's endless.
That's awesome. All right. So next question, it's a little deep. So let's just say this is your last day on the earth and you have all your friends around you. How do you want people to know you as?
Like I want them to know me as a selfless, kind, passionate person. I want them to remember me for like the contributions I made while I lived on this earth. Yeah, good or bad, I'm so productivity driven. Like I, since I was a conscious being, since I was a little boy, I've always thought about how to make a difference. And like a lot of my existence is contingent on making a difference while I live here, even though I know that doesn't actually change much because like where I'm one of trillion people that will probably exist over a lifetime. You know what I mean? But I just want to think, I want to die thinking that my existence mattered. And I want people to be able to agree, like, no, it did. It did matter. So that's what I think about a lot.
Awesome.
But more importantly, I don't want to just die and have like invented the iPhone. I want people to be like, he contributed and he was good to be around. Like he was a good friend, a good son,
yeah,
you know, brother. Like I don't want to just be like a super successful entrepreneur that was a dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like this, I don't think being a dick through your whole life is worth it. So,
right. Yeah. Like I want the people that know me the best to love me the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. So last question. So where can people contact you for being an agent? Like, you know, your marketing job, your marketing, you know, company or pretty much anything. I mean, shit, you could pretty much ask you anything. So where can they reach out to you?
Honestly, like Instagram is the best platform to reach me. I mean, my email is jared@e3biz.com, but like, if you shoot me a DM on Instagram, I'll see it, you know, or if it's like one of those hidden ones, I'll eventually see it, or follow me and then DM me. Normally that puts the DM in the open, messages category, but yeah, Instagram, I'm working on like revamping my website. It's not super high priority, but anyways, Instagram is the best place to reach me. That's where I'm most active, probably too active.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I really do appreciate it. Like, I was awesome learning about your story and all that stuff. And I'd love to have you back on, you know, maybe after the Zealous Games or, you know, before, and to kind of see what's coming up and everything.
Yeah, that would be exciting, man. And I'd love to learn more about you. So let's plan on having a conversation next time.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Thank you for having me. See you.
See you. Don't hang up yet. Don't hang up.
I'm used to it.
Okay. All right. I actually had Drew Wayman.